What up and welcome to another episode of Tilted Pod. I'm your host, Seth. Don't call me Jack Wilds. And I'm sitting here with a very special guest.
Very special.
Josh Kidd. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, buddy. What up?
Oh, man. Nothing much. Just podding. You know, just podding.
Little Pro Tour Pod.
Unfortunately, Nate could not make it this week.
Miss you, Nate.
We do think that we'll be doing another podcast later in the week with Nate. We'll kind of go over other things going on. You know, we just like to talk modern, so we might as well do a couple. But as promised, we are going to have out a nice Pro Tour recap for you this Tuesday. But we got to start out with something else. And it's what we do every week. What we've been doing. Go ahead, Josh.
All right. Well, I have been, of course, working. But you guys want to hear about what I've been doing in Magic?
Yeah, no one cares about work.
I've been playing in some leagues. I missed FNM last week. Girlfriend yelled at me, told me I'll never make the Pro Tour without going to FNM.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She's there for you then.
Yep.
That's cool.
She wants to see me up there with Jerry T.
My girlfriend got mad at me for going to FNM.
Let's move it on. Moving on to the, I've been playing Grixis Death Shadow in the leagues, doing the two Team Rebattle Rages and the four Stubborn Denials.
I like that.
Yeah.
You even moved to Ops as well, right?
I did move to Ops, and now I got to say that every chance I have three Ops and one Serum Visions, and I just always cut the Serum Visions.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just cutting it, like, up, cut the Serum Visions.
Yeah, you like the Ops more now.
I do, yeah.
Like, so why not just make it the fourth Op?
I don't know why. Like, it felt kind of nice, maybe. Like, sometimes having that Serum Visions and being able to just dig. But I think that there's just so many cards you want to hold up in the opening turns. Like, honestly, the way the meta is nowadays, I don't even... Like, if I have a... Say I have, like, a turn one Opt or... Thoughtseize or Stubborn Denial.
Yeah.
I usually don't even play the Thoughtseize turn one.
Like, right.
I just hold up all my cards and then, like, opt at the end of the turn if they don't do anything. And that's been seeming to go really well, so I might just go four ops.
Right. Yeah, I like that play, too. I mean, it's kind of nice. You don't necessarily always need that turn one Thoughtseize. You'd rather them see one more card.
Yeah.
It's not
like the old Jund days where it's right. Thoughtseize into Goyf all the time.
Right, and you just don't, that's just not a thing right now.
Yeah.
Cool. So, been doing pretty well in the leagues, though. A bunch of 3-2s, a couple 4-1s, maybe?
Yeah, usually most of the time I go 3-2. You know, that's kind of the standard with that deck. As long as you win 51% of your matches and lose 49, you're in there with that deck, I feel like. But I did go 4-1 Saturday night after... Watching the Pro Tour a little bit, got a 4-1, won how many treasure chests is that?
Eight. Did you open them up?
I didn't open them up.
Oh, you pansy.
No way.
Got to open them up.
That's 20 tickets, dog. It's $20.
Dude, that's $20. Could be a lot more than that, man.
Oh, well, it could be a pile of crap, too.
All right, here's the thing. You always open up the pity chest. You always open up the single chest, I think. If you go 3-2, that's the one I got to open.
Yeah, going 3-2, like, it's
gotta
like, open that do one. I want two tickets or do I want to open this?
Yeah,
and it's a lot easier, but when you can sell them all for 20 tickets.
20
like,
tickets is a pretty good chunk of change. Well, all right, so that sounds cool, man. Based on those leagues, compared to the beginning of the week and compared to Saturday when you were playing these leagues, what were you kind of – has the meta changed a little bit based on the Pro Tour? Or?
I have definitely been seeing the Hollow One deck and the Pyromancer decks. I actually have not seen, like, humans a lot. I really...
That's so weird. I felt like that deck would be everywhere after this. I consider it to be the breakout deck.
I think it's a breakout deck, too. I mean, like, you know, we all knew it was there, but for, you know, the majority... Well, not the majority, but 10% of the players at the Pro Tour to show up with that deck is...
Right. And very good players.
Yeah. Our boy Gucci.
Gucci, mate.
Gucci.
Oh, man, I'm so bummed that he didn't make it. We'll get into that in just a second
we'll
when we break down
that.
The Pro Tour. But, the Black Red Hollow One deck definitely has been showing up. I do think that this list is kind of the fixed version of that. Steve Rubin showed up to an SCG Open with it, saw it, became very popular after that. They weren't running four Goblin Lores. In fact, I think the original list didn't run any Goblin Lores. Even a local player at our shop plays this list based on Steve Rubin's list. And it's a popular deck, but I tried playing it for a little bit. Way too high variance for me.
Little shout out to Mac right there.
Oh, yeah, Mac, what up? It's just much too high variance, and I really like the deck, and it can do some really cool things, but part of me feels like it's a Hearthstone deck. You know, you're rolling dice, you're having, like, the, it's RNG all over, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's honestly not something I think that I would enjoy. Like, it can be very grindy.
Yeah.
But it's also just, like you said, the high variance. Like, I've played against it a couple times on MTGO, and they just draw a bunch of cards and discard a bunch of cards sometimes.
And don't really do anything.
Yeah, like
they're just discarding their good cards.
Play a Goblin Lore each turn, and, you know, and that is, can be kind of frustrating because you're looking at your cards and you're getting settled in, but then you're just like, oh, those cards are gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I don't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I find it to be a deck that just has too much variance for me. And it's a deck that, frankly, I'm surprised that many pros, like a bunch of Japanese players were on it. And it had, like, the highest percentage of conversion rate for day two. But for such high, like, regarded pros to jump on a deck with that much variance kind of shocked me.
Yeah.
I thought they would want, I mean, normally the typical go is, like, pros want to make sure they have control of everything, right? They want they want to control every aspect of
right.
the game.
They want to rely on their ability to right. be the best.
So they must have really thought this deck was good. It's something special, or I don't think they would play it. I mean, there's no way they would just be like, okay, just roll a dice and maybe I'll win. But so they must think that there's leverage there.
Yeah, I mean, and there is leverage because it is kind of a spiky deck.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And you come with the wrong graveyard hate, and it's kind of hard to deal with.
I honestly don't think that anybody came to the Pro Tour with graveyard hate at all.
Yeah, hardly.
You know,
I mean, Relic of Progenitus is basically like a main deck card
that's,
now.
That's like saying that Kolaghan's Command is artifact hate.
Yeah, but I mean, it is. I mean, it's important to know that those cards still exist and are main deck cards, but they're not like dedicated anymore.
No, it's not spots. Like people came with four.
Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void.
Leyline of the Void, that was the one I was trying to think of,
Yeah, now those Black Red Hollow One decks, I watched a couple people stream, are running three in their sideboard just for that mirror.
I got hit with one. I was playing against a guy with the Hollow One deck, and he hit me with a Leyline of the Void.
Yeah, card's really good. Really like that deck. Yep. I really like that card, especially in Legacy. It's great. What I've been doing in Magic is I have been testing a bunch of Eldrazi Tron, and... We're shout-outs to Mana Traders, because we are trying to get on a little program with them to see if we can start streaming and recording videos with their service. A buddy of mine let me use his service, and I'll tell you what, I really liked it. It was actually a lot better than I thought.
And what service is that, Seth?
Mana Traders. So what you do is a deck rental service for MTGO. I think they have a paper deck rental service as well. But you pay a subscription fee, essentially. And you get so many tickets to play with, so many hours of playing. And at first, it was kind of confusing to me. And it is a little bit expensive. But if you're in the market for just changing decks all the time, it's a lot cheaper. You're not going to be losing your value. And if you can get a pretty cheap subscription, if say you have the core cards, and say you wanted to play Modern and you just had all the fetches and some of the shock lands, you could probably just rent out the remainder of your deck for like $10 a month. If you're just looking at full on deck switches and you don't want to own any cards, you know, you're going to be paying around $60 a month, but hopefully we can get in with that subscription, because Sunday morning while watching the Pro Tour, I borrow buddy, shout out to Bibbs. I borrow his, deck Mana Traders account. I played five decks in like 4 hours. I just kept grabbing different decks, seeing, and I just wanted to see how fast the program worked. I wanted to see if it was complicated, and I was just running through decks. I mean, I played every one of the top eight decks, you know, and just went wild. Well, I guess I didn't play every one of the top eight decks, but I played almost all of them. Didn't play Mardu Pyromancer.
What subscription package were you using?
He had the $60 one.
The $60.
So it was full. I didn't have to own anything. I got it. There was not a deck that I couldn't afford based on that.
Is that the 750?
That goes up to 750, yeah. Yeah. So I'd like, I would suggest looking into it. It's really cool if you want to change decks all the time. And for somebody who wants to record a lot of videos, because we want to get videos out to you guys best we can, I can't afford to do that anymore. Just buy a new deck here and there. Sure. It's a lot of money. It adds up really fast. And I've had to sell my account twice so I could buy stuff for the podcast. well, this option may be okay for me. You know, this might be the one where I can put out a lot of content and I don't have to worry about. The problem is I always liked having that money or the account. I liked having the cards because if something happened, right. I could sell the cards and I would have that money back.
Definitely.
And I've loved that about Magic Online. It's easier to sell than my paper collection, by far.
Way easier.
Just by
far. Shout out to Card Hoarder.
Yeah, Card Hoarder. Thank you. Well, also, I could talk to Card Hoarder about that, too. Maybe they got an online subscription source coming up soon. But anyway, so I've played a bunch of decks. Played the Humans deck. I think the deck's great. I used to play that. I still have it in paper. Phantasmal Image made the deck way better because the thing I hated about the deck in paper was Mirror of Avabruk. I thought that card was garbage. I just never liked it. Didn't like it when it flipped. Changed all my math. Didn't like it when it came down as a 1-1 that barely pumped. You know,
right.
You didn't need another Lord. Phantasmal Image, though, giving you like which Lord you wanted because it was just way better.
Daddy's Lieutenant over Mayor of Avabruk
exactly.
All day.
Yeah, all day. So I didn't. That was fun. And it was a very good deck, and I think it's going to be a player. I think it's going to be a major deck for a while. And the only thing that's going to happen is it's going to keep getting better because they're going to keep printing humans.
They are definitely never going to stop printing humans.
And I'm playing all these decks, right? And then I just go back to my personal account and pick up Eldrazi Tron again, and I just start crushing people. And I just feel – it just feels so good. And I realize, like, no, guys, I legitimately like this deck now. It's not just, like – I pick the deck because I want to be the Eldrazi guy. I like the deck. It's more fun for me to play that deck than any of the other decks I played.
That's the cool part about Modern.
That is the cool part about Modern. And I've never been the guy who can sit with one deck. So it was nice to have that deck ADD, but it was nice to come home to my Eldrazi Tron.
Coming home to mom.
And just kind of crush. But
Mama thought Nazi here.
Eldrazi Tron, I've got 2 4-1s and some 3-2s, and then I've got one real bad one that was like 0-3 out.
Ouch.
But that happens.
That's gonna happen. That does happen.
You know. That's enough about us. Let's talk about the Pro Tour because we're going to get into these Modern decks a lot. And starting out with the Pro Tour, let's just go on over to the top 8 list. So, Pro Tour, Rivals of Ixalan. Unless you've been under a rock, you should know that Luis Salvato won the tournament, defeating
Jerry Thompson.
Jerry T. Playing a little thing called Lantern Control. What do you think about this?
Well, I definitely think that it is a resilient deck. I was kind of hoping for Jerry T to win. I did say before the Pro Tour started that I thought Lantern was going to win.
Shot called. You did call it.
But I also didn't really want it to win. Because nobody really likes that deck except for the guy playing that deck at the exact moment he's playing it.
Right.
But overall, I just thought it was a resilient deck that won the game through ways people weren't, you know, you can't really game for it because it's only going to show up in 1%, and it's just really good.
I think it's a great deck. I think the pitchforks are out now, and people want it banned. And I'm tired. I'm honestly, personally tired of hearing about toxic banning as soon as one deck does well. If Mardu Pyromancer would have won that tournament, would somebody have been like, ban Bedlam Reveler? Or, you know what I mean? Like, is ban Lingering Souls? Is Lingering Souls too good now? I get really upset when people just attack the deck that won just because.
For just tilted, no reason. Like, that deck won.
Right. So, I mean, I understand this deck is not the most fun to play against.
The funny part is that nobody's saying, like, ban humans, even though humans
was
the
number one deck,
deck
and had a great conversion rate.
Yeah, two players in the top 80.
Yeah, it's the only deck that had multiple copies in the top 8.
Yeah, but
so 11 people played Lantern Control. I think of those 11 people, 5 of them did well, and one made the top 8 and won the whole tournament. And Luis Salvato said himself, though, he thought the deck was going to get banned, so he didn't pick it up in his original testing for the format. When they didn't ban it, he was like, oh god, they made a mistake, I'm gonna come in. So when pros say stuff like that, and when the guy who just won the tournament with it, it sounds bad, it makes everybody else go, we should ban it. But if they did hit it with a ban, what do you think they would ban?
Well, I know that a lot of people have said ban Mox Opal. I'm not a big fan of that.
Oh my god, if they did that, I'll be so angry.
Yeah, like I get that Mox Opal is a busted card, 100%.
But
Mox,
it takes a lot of deck building requirements.
Exactly. Like, and it's just, and it's not even super busted in that deck. Like, I don't think if you ban Mox Opal, Lantern's going to stop being a thing.
Right.
Like.
I do think it helps the deck out tremendously, but no, it's not going to just stop it.
Yeah, like there's a lot of times, and in my personal that I've played Lantern and they've just never played a Mox Opal,
right?
Or like, you know, like a lot of times you'll Thought Seize Affinity and you'll be like, oh, I got to take this Mox.
Yeah,
Opal.
The Mox is very important.
Know? Like
it like breaks their hand down. Yes. If you take it sometimes.
But you get a hand against Lantern. And you're like, this Mox is kind of annoying.
But I probably should take that Whirr, I should take that Ancient Stirrings, or
but, like, whereas like the Mox even their wins own you the game in Affinity, yeah. Like it doesn't really win you the game in.
No, it just helps you come out a little faster, and I think the deck is much better because of Mox. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it makes the deck
right, busted.
And do I think it would nerf the deck? Probably a bit. But would it nerf Affinity completely? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I think Affinity would be finally gone for good.
Yeah, like, because those are the beatable hands without...
You know, 100% beatable.
Yeah.
Yeah. The deck's really not that amazing if you don't have that little bit of extra ramp.
Mm, no.
And it's you're playing with 1/2s. Like, difficult to do, you know, 0/1s and 1/1s and evasive creatures, yes, but you're playing with 1/1s, basically. You know, like... If they ended up banning Mox and Affinity was no longer allowed, I think it would be the worst thing to happen to Modern ever.
I do, too.
It's been the one consistent deck. Think about how many people have been playing this deck forever, since Modern first started.
Well, and that's kind of the thing, like, I was thinking about yesterday. We were kind of talking about it. And I feel like that Affinity is kind of the lightning bolt for the format. Where, you know, before it was, does this creature pass the lightning bolt test? Is it playable?
Right.
You know, like, is this deck playable? Well, does it beat Affinity? Or can it beat Affinity? Or
yeah.
At least have game against Affinity?
Yeah, and if not, are you sure that you packed enough sideboard cards?
Yeah, exactly.
And Affinity is very beatable because of sideboard cards. Sideboard cards against artifact decks are so good. So I think that you can game against Lantern, to be completely honest. Right? Just more Ancient Grudges?
Yeah, Ancient Grudges is probably the best card, but just because they can't mill it. They have to, like, Pyxis it or Surgical Extraction it.
Or they have to have a Graft Diggers out.
Mm-hmm.
But they play one main deck. I just feel like the deck is very beatable. I've beat the deck tons. I played the deck for a while, and granted, I'm not the best. And it didn't have Whirr. Whirr, I think, made the deck much better.
Yeah.
But I played the deck a lot online, and I was like 50% with it, maybe, and I practiced a lot with it. I mean, but it's beatable. It's completely a beatable deck. There's certain decks that don't even care about it at all, that to just do a different thing. I mean, Blood Red Sun and Moon, it's another prison style deck. That deck, they don't care about that at all. They don't care about what you're doing with Lantern. They're gonna beat you.
Yes.
So, but Word did make it a lot better, because now you can play like the Hexproof card main deck. You can play like the one of Graft Digger's Cage. You can do these nice little spicy things. You can cut one of the ensnaring bridges. You know, I don't know. I like the deck. I actually think it's really cool, and I think it's really cool that in Modern there's another deck that fights the format on a completely different level. And I think that's important in Eternal formats. Don't we want diversity to where it's not all creature matchups, or it's not all just super combo decks? Like, prison decks have always been fine. They've always been there. I think banning this one, because it might... The big question is it too much like Miracles? Is it too much like Top? Is it too boring to watch?
That's the question. Is this the new Sensei's Divining Top?
Yeah.
And I like that it definitely adds to diversity, but it also... And a lot of people will say that, well, that's just inexperienced players picking the deck up and going to time.
Right.
But the deck really does take a while to play against, you know.
It does, but isn't it also inexperienced players or hopeful players not scooping? When it's
like,
over.
Like, we can all take lessons from Jerry T watching the Pro Tour, you know, finals, and you know, he knew that he couldn't beat those cards, and he scooped them up. And,
yeah.
And so that's why, you know, they played a best of seven, or best of five. Is it best of five? It's best of five. And they went relatively quickly because Jerry knew when he was beat and when to scoop his cards. And so, like, I've been in positions where it's like, oh, there's one out in my deck.
Yeah.
You know?
My percentage point is, like, 5%.
Yes. And it's like, what are the chances that they don't mill my Colligan's Command and I get it and just hang on and waste my clock and ruin my life?
Right. And I think on Magic Online, it's more likely for somebody to just F6, F6, F6 and make the person try to time, you know, run their clock down. But in paper, I'm hoping the opposite is true. You know, like, people will just scoop because you're both on the same clock.
Right, and a draw is the same thing as a loss.
Right. Essentially, it's, you know, unless you're in ID time, mm-hmm. it's basically nothing you can do. So, did you enjoy watching the final?
I actually didn't get to watch it that much. I had to work on Sunday morning, and so, like, I went to work at, like, 10, so I was watching most of the matches up until the finals, but I had to leave and to go back to work. I went back and watched it, and it was okay. It definitely wasn't my favorite match to watch. That match where Jerry came back against Blue-Red Pyromancer was obviously everybody's favorite match.
One of the better matches in the whole tournament, I think. Watching, you know.
Have you seen the memes going around with Jerry's face? And it's like, when you come back down two games with one life.
Yeah, the memes are good.
Yeah.
I enjoy the memes. Well, when we are talking about, you know, this Pro Tour, I feel like there's a lot of good things. So, what did we think about Mardu Pyromancer, Jerry's list?
I think it's good. You know, it can be grindy. It can be all-in combo to win. It definitely attacks you from a lot of angles. And if you're not ready for it, it can get you.
I mean, I feel like it attacks you from a goal-wide strategy. And I guess his list is running 2 Blood Moons. Didn't realize he has a Ghost Quarter in his sideboard. That's pretty interesting.
I didn't realize that he wasn't on the Gurmag Anglers either.
Yeah, no Gurmag Anglers, no nothing. He's all straight up on Young Pyromancer and Bedlam Reveler. And Bedlam Reveler in his deck was so good. Like, I've seen some people trimming on Bedlam Revelers, you know, but it felt like disgusting that he was what he was doing with the Bedlam Reveler.
That's kind of that high variance card, though, because there's been a lot of times where I've played against this deck and they've cast a Bedlam Reveler and they just have a 3/4 and they draw a bunch of lands and it's like, oh, that's garbage.
But you still can't admit that even if they draw a bunch of lands, it doesn't matter. So an Ancestral Vision could be just, I pay one and I draw a bunch of lands. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah. But I mean, the deck doesn't even play that many lands. 20 lands. It Faithless Looting. I think the Mana Morphos is kind of interesting. Collective Brutality. I think that card just did so much work all weekend. What do you think about Collective Brutality?
Yeah, it's definitely a hot and spicy card right now. The ability, you know, to discard for value, like Lingering Souls,
right,
or some sort of value card. Is he playing any of the, he's not playing any of the discard value cards, right?
With Madness?
Yes.
No, nothing with Madness in this. Yeah, this deck is strictly about, like, putting in basically just Lingering Souls, right? Or dumping cards he doesn't need. He has a larger variety of cards, right? So he's searching with Faithless Looting and, you know, fueling his Bedlam Reveler.
Right.
And he's just really trying to run through his deck to find what he...
To see as many cards as possible.
Right.
Yeah, and this deck definitely does that well.
Yeah, so watching him play throughout this tournament, you know, I've been out and said it. I don't like this deck. I don't think this deck seems that great. But watching him play at this tournament, I was shocked and surprised at how well he was able to navigate situations where he looked for sure dead. And I think most people, here's another thing we can talk about a little bit. Most people would give up when they're at one life. You know, they're just kind of, they run out. A lot of people concede early when they're being beat early. They don't fully concede, but mentally they've checked out and they're like, yeah, I don't think a lot of people play through the hard patches enough and like really try to win or think or stay calm, at least not tilt. And Jerry, watching him play through games where he was getting crushed and then come back and win, and it like it never fazed him, was the most impressive thing to me. Like, I loved watching him play. Even though I don't like the deck that much, seeing him get beat pretty bad and just keep a smile on his face and somehow navigate these waters against like humans. He did it against humans like multiple times. Every time we saw him play humans, it looked like he was just getting beat up. And then, he comes back at one or two life.
Here comes Jerry T.
I actually have more respect for Jerry Thompson after this tournament than I think any of the ones I've seen him play. Like, I noticed it more. His head seemed way better. Like, he seemed way more in the zone in this tournament.
Yeah, definitely. Like when he was playing mono black, when the
zombies,
yeah, when he won the pro tour, it was like he played that deck and just kind of crushed. I mean, he had some hard patches,
right?
But he never, like, he played that pro tour and won it. Like this pro tour, he was on the ropes all the time,
every game. You know, and I think this deck kind of plays from behind, you know, the gun a little bit, but it also was like, I don't know, just watching him turn the corner when he needed to was insane. It was good. So I think this deck is going to be very popular. To me, this is more consistent with what Jund used to be now. You know what I mean? Like, that's all. I'm a little bit surprised you didn't like it. It's just got this is the removal package and things like that. It just seems like Jund to me. You know, you got your Thought Seizes. But the looting and the Bedlam Reveler and those things kind of run out. And the one of Manamorphose, which is kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm not a fan of this deck, but I do plan on seeing it a lot. And I might stream with this deck or record it with this deck because it seems like people really enjoy this deck. And that may change my mind. Maybe playing it is like, oh, wow, this has got a ton of game, you know? In fourth place, tied for fourth place, we watched, okay, so Lantern Control had to play Black Red Hollow One in the semis. Luis Salvato playing Ken Yukihara. And Ken, we talked about this Black Red Hollow One deck a little bit. He's got the 3-1 Tasigur and Gurmag split on the Gurmag 3. He's playing 4 Goblin Lores and 4 obviously of the Faithless Looting and Burning Inquiries. He's playing 2 main deck Collector Brutality, again, a card that is great in this deck. He doesn't have any of the Madness cards, right? Which is, I think, a big difference. Like,
I like that.
He just took that out.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with some of these, I don't want to call it gimmicky decks, but they are kind of gimmicky.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be able to differentiate what's too gimmicky.
Right.
And so, like, I like this streamlined business-like list rather than playing, like, some of the cute value cards.
Right.
You know, discarding just doesn't need, you know, like, just discard.
You just don't need the Madness effects.
Yeah, you don't.
I mean, I think the Madness effects aren't necessary. He does have one Madness card in it, and it's Big Game Hunter. However, I do think that card is worth having in the sideboard. Very good against a lot of decks. And that's a fine.
Card gets me all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. But having, like, what is it, Fiery Temper?
Yeah,
just not worth it. I mean, already Bolt is not worth it. Like you have Bolt, but it's not worth having, like, additional copies of Bolt that are 3 mana if you don't have something going on.
Yeah, just stick to your Lightning Bolts.
Right. Sideboard, he's got the 3 Leyline of the Voids, 2 Blood Moons, 2 Big Game Hunters, a Collective Brutality, 2 Ancient Grudge, 3 Grim Lavamancer, and 2 Fatal Push. This deck made Grim Lavamancer look fire when he played against Luis Salvato. Did you watch that?
I did not see that.
Man,
no.
He stuck a Grim Lavamancer and finished the game with Grim Lavamancer. Unable to attack with all his creatures, he just started chipping in with 2s, having to, like, discard to hand size almost, like, playing a game where Luis couldn't Luis couldn't like mill him because he couldn't put cards in his graveyard and he couldn't find his Pithy Needle. He had named like Bloodstainmire instead of Grim Lavamancer.
Going with the gotcha.
Yeah, so he got him for a couple turns, but then when Grim Lavamancer landed, it was just wild. It was a really cool game. It was really cool watching Ken Yukihiro come back because he had lost two games, then won two games, and then it ended up going to game five. And I would say that Lantern had probably one of the best chances against this deck. Like, it was probably best. Like, this was Black Red Hollow One was probably the last deck they wanted to play was Lantern. I just don't think they have enough. Now, they are really fast, but they just don't have enough to get there.
Yeah, it's just... yeah, and I don't normally, I'm not a big fan of the mana denial lines with Lantern. Mm-hmm. Like, the deck's so slow that you really, you know, trying to name a land with your pithing, like a fetch land, I don't know. Like, I guess it can be good, but they're going to draw. Can you keep them off a land and mill them the whole game? Like, is that...
Yeah, I think you can, and I think it's there was a reason he did it. I mean, he had a clear reason. I think he wanted to keep him off of a Blood Moon, or something. He had a blood. You know, he knew his hand. He knew everything was going on, and there was probably another Bloodstainmire. There was a clear reason he did it. But he's got another Pithy Needle in the deck, maybe two. So he probably thought there's no if I can stunt him for a turn, but it didn't work out, and. Yukihiro got there, and Ken, congratulations to Ken. The awesome tournament. I really enjoyed watching him play. He was a blast to like watch play too. He was like very emotional, but a lot really happy too. It's like a weird. He showed everything on his face, but he was like pumped. And in that interview, they were talking about, so when you play this deck, what do you have to know? You know, when you play this deck, and he's like, if you discard your holo ones, just don't let it break your heart because it's going to happen.
I did see that.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, dude, that guy's awesome. Like, you just got to know this. Speaking of awesome, though, check it out. So all these Black Red Hollow One decks played by these Japanese players, Shota Yasuoka, Ken Yukihiro, Tareyu, I'm not sure how to say his name, and Kentaro Yamamoto all played it, all to really high finishes, like 6-4, 8-2, 7-1, 6-4, like great results with this deck, right? So that's impressive. I think these Japanese players really knew what they were doing. All right, so let's talk about the other side. I guess the semifinals were both, like, my favorite matches.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were the best. So then it was Mardu Pyromancer versus Blue-Red Pyromancer. This Blue-Red Pyromancer, also a deck that kind of came out of nowhere. And on Sunday, whenever I was playing on Magic Online, I played against this deck probably 5 times. Very popular.
I haven't seen much of this deck. I have seen a lot of the Through the Breach Moon decks.
Really? I haven't seen that one as much. It's this one that I'm seeing.
I saw a lot of the Through the Breach Moon decks. Maybe this is an evolution of that. Are they playing Blood Moons? Is he playing Blood
Moons? No, this deck has no Blood Moons. Okay, so this deck essentially is Young Pyromancer, Snapcaster Mage, Thing in the Ice, and a lot of counterspells, right? So a big key to this deck, though, is your Ancestral Visions. You really want to have those go off. But he's just playing so many efficient spells. Spellsnares, Abrades, Logic Knots, Mana Leaks, Remands, Roast. Roast main deck is sexy. Electrolyze, Cryptic Command. Cryptic Command is a big part of this deck. And he's either going to kill you with a Thing in the Ice or a Young Pyromancer, and he's just going to take control of the game after he's countered all your threats. Right, and then he's just going to churn through cards, see way more than you. His Ancestral Vision is going to go off, and then you're going to be buried in card advantage. Like, I think this deck on paper looks like an FNM deck.
Yeah.
And this guy just came and crushed. Like, he did really, really well. I don't like this deck, but I do like it more than the Blood Moon variants.
Do you?
Yes.
It's like a blue-red binder deck.
It is a blue-red binder deck. You're right. It does seem very much like that. The thing I do like about it is it the Field of Ruin, 3 Field of Ruin? This card seemed like it made its name, this Pro Tour. Every deck was playing it. All the control decks had Field of Ruin in their decks. It fixes your mana, and it stunts theirs. And since Tron's such a big deck, like, I think Field of Ruin's really good. Would you suggest, like, what do you think about Field of Ruin?
I actually like Field of Ruin. I've been thinking about putting together, like, Black Green Rock.
Yeah, they play it, don't they?
Like, yes. They play four ofs. And so I'm not exactly sure how well that deck is positioned.
It's popular.
Yeah, you know, it but it does, like, Field of Ruin lets you play a kind of a non-blue deck and still have decent game against the big mana decks without right. Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Without having to play Blood Moon.
I think this deck is going to be really popular. I think this deck's going to be really popular with a lot. I mean, I feel like this is a deck we're going to see at our shop for sure. And it's a deck that I'm probably going to end up putting together just to test out. But it is, I do like this more than the go all in. Like, this has a lot of play to it. Like, you're going to win with Thing in the Ice or Young Pyromancer or just Snapcaster
Beatdown.
But it's not like, I like the fact that it's not Blood Moon. But I'll tell you what, a lot of people playing against this deck, when you start fetching Snow Covered Island and Snow Covered Mountain, they're going to think you're a Blood Moon deck. You know, so they're going to play around it heavily. And then you feel the ruin in the mouth of their. I think it's a cool deck.
Yeah, I feel like anytime I see snow covered lands.
You're fetching basics.
Yeah, basic island, basic swamp. Like, it's basic time.
So he played against Mardu Pyromancer in the semifinals. The match went all five. Jerry came back from three, from two, losing two, came back
down
all the way. And I think that the matchup it was very interesting. It was very good. The games were long and compelling, like, to watch. I thought it was probably one of the best ones in the whole tournament that I saw. What you agree with that one?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. That's just, it was so, like, emotional and,
right.
You know, it just had all the good stuff.
All the ups and downs.
Yeah.
So our boy, good guy Reed Duke, was also in the top eight. And I'm sorry, listeners, but I called it completely wrong. Not completely. Reed did not play Jund. Reed played Abzan. Reed is the only one who showed up with Tarmogoyf in the top eight. In fact, I don't know if anybody else had Tarmogoyf in day two besides, like, Traverse Shadow. Because there's two. There's Traverse Shadow has Tarmogoyf. So never mind. But you know what I'm saying. So Reed Duke's Abzan list. I hate Abzan. I love Reed Duke, but God, I hate this deck. It's the most boring deck in the whole world to me. But I had to root for Reed a little bit. I mean, Tireless Trackers, Dark Confidants, Grim Flayer, Scavenging News. I mean, this is basically the green black rock deck, right? The only reason I like Reed a lot is because Reed understands that a little card called Treetop Village is one of the best. It's like, I don't understand why people don't play that card more. I think it's a great man land.
It is a great man land. It's fast. It has, it has good power level, 3/3 trample.
I think it's the best man land. It's my favorite one.
It is definitely.
It's so good. So his deck is so streamlined, right? Two Maelstrom Pulse, I feel like, is kind of interesting, but I think a good call. Two Nile Spellbombs main deck. I think he was definitely assuming there would be more Grixis Shadow. And you being a Grixis Shadow player, how does this deck fare against that?
This is probably in the top worst matchups.
Especially with main deck now Spellbombs, like, and then Lingering Souls.
It's the Lingering Souls, yeah.
Like, Lilianas, four of them.
Four Lilianas. You just have all the cards that, like, people would bring in against you in the sideboard.
Right.
Just main decked. You got because Lingering Souls is there. That card's rough. You have to take out your TBRs, your Teemer Battle Rages, or else you'll get blown out. So you're taking out Teemer Battle Rage, which is your best card against Lingering Souls, and this is just a nightmare matchup for
to me,
Death Shadow.
To me, Reed Duke, this proves that Modern is not just a deck format, it's a skill-intensive format, because Reed Duke making the finals with a deck that everybody was like, this deck is dead. But if you look at the cards here, all his cards are good against something. I think his deck is built beautifully. I think this is a perfect Pro Tour build of Abzan. And the fact that he's just a really good player and he knows what to do with those cards and how to sequence them, that makes me think even more that Modern is a very skilled format and the better players can win. It's not just a flip of the coin, where a lot of people were saying.
Right. Well, a little off topic here, it is kind of off topic, but on the same page was, I think Corey Burkhart did well with his
With his weird Eldrazi or control. Yeah, Grixis control.
Yeah. It's like top 16 or something.
Yeah.
And that's a deck that everybody says is dead.
It's bad. So Reed, Abzan in the quarterfinals played against Ken. And Ken just had the nuts on him, I think. I think he played turn one to two hollow ones. Yeah. And just kind of went nuts on them. And the games went fast. And Reed did what he could. But congratulations to Reed, you know, for making it to the top eight. On the other side of the table, we have humans. We got Javier Dominguez playing humans. And we've got Andrea Moguchi playing humans. And then we have another one, which is the Jean-Emmanuel Dupre, who is playing Traverse Shadow. We're going to talk about Traverse Shadow before we break into humans. Real fast. And Traverse Shadow is also a Tarmogoyf Grimflayer deck. I tried playing this deck. It's really, really hard to play. It's really hard to play. Like, Grixis Death Shadow, I feel kind of, now at this point, makes more sense. You know, it kind of plays itself a little bit. Like, I know which lands to get. I'm not concerned with, I understand how Grixis works. Picking this up again was like, whoa. Like, I was fetching the wrong lands at the wrong times and just, like, making bonehead mistakes. And the worst thing is, like, you realize it while you're doing it. It's just you can't stop. You're like, right. Click it, and you're like, wait, why did I do that? This deck is playing, I think his list is cool. He's playing a Grimflayer and a Snapcaster Mage, so that's fun. I like Snapcaster. Two Lilies of the Veil, three Fatal Push, a bunch of Hand Disruption, three Traverse, two Abrupt Decays, two Teemer Battle Rage, a Dismember. This actually has a much less, I think Mishra's Bauble in this deck is excellent. Oh, yeah. But this has much less removal than a typical Death Shadow deck. Would you ever go back to this deck? I think this is possibly the better of the two decks, but I think it's harder to play.
I don't necessarily agree that it's better. I think it's better in certain situations. This is much more threat dense.
Right.
That's a big problem whenever I'm playing Grixis, is a lot of times you'll get these opening hands that are just like, yeah, I have it all, but I don't have a threat. And then you just never draw a threat, and you use all your cards, and they still kill you.
Right.
You know, and that's not really a problem here. I did play this deck for a good while.
You
I
did.
Think I played it at a GP. It might have been an open. I'm not sure. I played the Stubborn Denial version. I had a Snapcaster in the sideboard
Two
at
stubs.
The time. And it is really good. It is really hard to play. Your Mishra's Baubles being able to scry are really important.
Right.
You know, because you're lacking those blue dig cards. And so you just need every percentage point of advantage you can get. And it also is, like, hard, like you're saying, your sequencing.
Is very hard.
Because you're actually playing a five-color deck.
Yes.
And there is just, you know, like, when you go down through and look at all the different colors here, it's just, it looks like the Czech Pile Legacy deck.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I honestly feel like it's an aggressive version of that. You know what I mean? It's like, it's got answers for everything. You've got counter spells, removal spells, hand disruption. You've got basically a search up, any, you know, a traverse is just your tutor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got a little bit of everything, a little bit of a combo kill with your Teemer Battle Rage, plus your zero drops that are just going to dig you cards, and really efficient threats in Grimflayer, Death Shadow, and Tarmogoyf. The lands are crazy, you know. Then your sideboard, you even got another land because it's just too hard. Ancient Grudges, Collective Brutalities, another Teemer Battle Rage, Kozilek's Return, The Last Hope, and Lingering Souls. And the coolest thing, I think, is that he's playing a Hostage Taker in the sideboard, so he can jack your version. In the Pro Tour, though, this deck way outperformed Grixis Death Shadow.
In a percentage?
At the Pro Tour, yeah. I mean, we have 9-1 lists, 8-2 lists, 7-3 lists, and 6-4 lists out the wazoo. Like, it was one of the better performing decks in the tournament.
I guess, like, the problem just always with this deck was this consistency. Sometimes it can be so finicky, fickle, you know, without that card draw and the smoothing out your draw steps.
I think everything about it is harder just because you don't have any way to fix a hand. You know, there's just, but it also has just this powerful end game, and I think it's,
oh yeah,
it can just beat down. And having, like, all of those hand disruption spells, you know, followed up by a counter when you need it, I just feel like it can end the game really quickly.
Yeah. And for everything that everybody says about Tarmogoyf, you know, and all the woes it has received lately, in a deck like that, I mean, a 6-7 Tarmogoyf is really, you know, 7-8. It could even be 7-8 easily.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. great card. We saw some big ones this weekend. We're going to talk about humans, then we're going to talk about the best performing decks, and then we're going to wrap this up. Humans, Javier Dominguez and Andrea Moguchi, and Mr. Gucci Mane, our Gucci favorite. Mane. I was definitely rooting for him. This deck is wild. I mean, it's just Unclaimed Territory brought it into existence, as well as Kite Cell Freebooter. I played a version of this deck before it had gotten fleshed out, where you were playing like, and some people actually played the version I used to play at the tournament, where you're playing like Avacyn's Pilgrims and Collected Company.
Not a fan.
No, I wasn't at all. I played a tournament and it felt awful. Yeah. But this version I've played a few times and I really like it. Now, Kesic Malcontents is a new addition that Gucci Mane wasn't actually playing.
Did
in
he
his
not
deck.
Have
no, he had Kithian, and I prefer Kesic Malcontents. Kesic Malcontents gives it a little reach, but you're just playing really efficient two drive. I mean, you're playing Hate Bears essentially that get out of control. Like Champion of the Parish can get out of control. You got Aether Vial and Cavern, so forget about countering anything. You've got cards like, you know, Manus Rider, which is a fast clock, Reflector Mage against creature decks, and then Thalia and Meddling Mage just make combo decks really, like, have no game against you. You kind of just hit them, lock them out of the game, and beat them up really fast. The thing that's really great about this deck, though, I think, is the inclusion of Phantasmal Image, because even if they just target it and you have to sack it, if you copy a Lieutenant or if you copy a Meddling Mage or you copy a Freebooter, you're still jacking something. You know what I mean? You're still you're getting some sort of benefit. Kesic Malcontents, you're getting that trigger, Reflector Mage, except it's still doing something. This deck, it's all creatures. There's a couple of things in the sideboard that are, you know, maybe one Grafdigger's Cage, maybe a couple Dismembers. But other than that, you're just playing humans, humans, humans.
37 main deck creatures.
37 main deck creatures. And then your sideboard is like 12 more creatures.
Yeah.
This deck is only going to get better. I think this deck, this was the deck of the Pro Tour. It had the most copies make it over to day two. It was very popular. A ton of 7-2, 7-3. 6-4 finishes. It's going to be a deck that I think is hard. It's going to be hard to beat sometimes. Like, I have a pretty decent record with it, but the deck can go off and can have those explosive hands like Affinity that are just like, how do you beat that? How do you beat that? So,
yeah, some of those Aether Vial hands are just
insane. I think the deck's going to be really popular. I think it's a deck that you should, if you have some of this stuff, sleeve it up and just see what you like. I mean, if you want to play an aggressive beatdown strategy, this is the one. Aether Vial, like I said, Aether Vial, great card.
The deck's really, I mean, like, I hate to say that any deck is not hard to play, you know, because they all have their sequencing and stuff, but I have never played the deck, but it doesn't seem super hard to play.
Meddling Mage. It's important. I mean, I think there's decisions with that deck.
Yeah, definitely decisions.
I think there's some hard decisions.
Like, you got to sequence your Thalia's Lieutenants correctly and know what you're doing, you know. But for the most part, like, you can play creatures and turn them sideways.
Well, here's my argument, because playing creatures and turning them sideways to me is the hardest thing to do in Magic. By far. Because I think that combat math is the number one most messed up thing anybody does. Like, new players cannot, like, that's why Limited is so, like, really so, good player are good at Limited.
That's why new players don't like draft that
combat
much.
Math is extremely hard, so knowing when to turn the clock, knowing when to attack, knowing what you can attack with, I think is really hard. So aggro strategies, as much as somebody can go, yeah, there are games where you're going to pick it up, drop creatures, turn them sideways because they have no board, but aggro versus aggro matchups are, I think, some of the hardest games you could possibly play. So the idea of just saying I do understand it does kind of play itself a little bit, like, you know what you're doing, but I do not think it is an extremely easy deck to play, because in Modern there are a lot of matchups where you're like, I can't just attack into this stuff. How do I leverage my way for this victory? You know what I mean?
I agree. I don't think that, like, there's any deck in Magic that you can just pick it up and be good at it. Like, Magic's just not that kind
right.
of game.
Especially in Modern. What are you going to pick up and
but,
be good at?
Like,
not even Burn. I mean, you can't even do
that.
Well,
that's what I was about to, like, make a comparison, is that, like, Burn is really hard to play.
Yeah.
Like, you...
Well, to play it well. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's hard to play any of these decks well.
Yeah.
You can pick up Burn and just start you know, bolting main phase. You know,
but, oh, yeah.
And you can win some games. And the same thing's going to happen with humans. You could do that and start just casting everything willy-nilly and not naming the wrong cards, and you could, you're still going to win some games because it's an aggressive deck. But that doesn't, you're not going to win there. You know, you're going to fall off quickly once you start playing people who know what they're doing. And so I see what you're, I mean, I know what you're saying. Affinity's the same way. Affinity is going to be one of those decks where you drop everything and you just win. And you're like, wow, that was easy. And then you're going to have some games where you're like, how did that person with Affinity win that game? It looked like he was completely losing. You just figured everything out. So that was a top eight. I thought the top eight was really good. 45,000 people tuned in on Sunday to watch the top eight. 45,000 people. Successful Magic tournament. One of the highest in their recorded history, but they've only been recording it for a year.
Modern's dead, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Long live Modern. What do you think? I mean, do you want to see, after this Pro Tour, do you want to see another Modern Pro Tour?
Not for a while.
You don't?
No, I do eventually. I love watching Modern. I love, you know, playing Modern. But, like, I just don't think that we need one. You know, we've showcased it. Like, I've been talking a lot that I would like to see maybe with the way they're changing the format, how they're going to the three blocks, or, well, they're not blocks, but the three sets and a core set.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, like, every summer or whatever, when a core set comes out, we have some cool Pro Tour, you know, once a year, where it's like a Modern Pro Tour, the upcoming team constructed Pro Tour. And then, you know, the other three sets, we just go back to the standard Pro Tour and showing off the new cards. And I think that would be cool, you know, like, but I'm not even necessarily a proponent of one a year, maybe one every other year.
Okay. I feel like that a lot of people would disagree with you at this point because of how popular this one was, but I kind of am on the same page with you a little bit. I think that maybe one a year might even be too much, or maybe at least one a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Just, you know, the old adage, you know, too much of a good thing.
Right.
You know, like, it's easy to get in the mindset, oh, well, this was fantastic. Why, you know, why don't we just have a Modern Pro Tour every set?
Right.
And
well, I would never want that. Right, yeah.
But, you know, you know what I'm saying. Whereas, you know, this was a beautiful thing. It was great. It had a great top eight. You know, it had it had some big names. You know, like, people know who Reed Duke, who Gucci, Jerry T. You know, these people are not no-name people.
Right.
And that was kind of the big thing, was a lot of people were like, after day one, you know, look, this is the least star-studded day two of Pro Tour. And it's like, yeah, we got some new names, but we also got some Modern veterans who put in
work. Yeah, definitely. I don't think, once you saw the top eight, you were like, oh, never mind, okay.
Yeah.
You guys weren't completely correct. There was a lot of people playing for, you know, in top eight contention that were big names.
Yes.
You know?
I think we watched a game, right, where it was Reed Duke and the Great One playing for top eight contention.
Yeah. John Finkel.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Finkel was on Tron too. No Storm. Storm had a terrible turnout. I think a lot of that had to do with humans.
Yes.
I think humans really kind of locked that up. Tron did okay. It had a lot of decks. No Tron in the top eight, obviously, but it had a lot of decks do pretty well. In fact, the most winning deck on the day was Eldrazi Tron by Jacob Negro. What is that? How do you say his last name?
I think so. Sorry, Jacob.
Sorry, Jacob. But hey, dude, you're playing the deck that I love. And
four Endbringers.
I honestly think, he's playing the Sand Party version. The only thing he's doing a little bit different is playing an extra Hangar Backwalker, and he's playing another All Is Dust in the sideboard, and I think that's a great decision. But other than that, I mean, this is the exact same thing. He's got a lot of hate. He's only playing one Cavern, which ended up being fine for the day. There wasn't a whole lot of Counterspell decks. But I don't know. He just smashed the tournament, man.
Smash.
9-0-1, the most winning on the day. There was Eldrazi Chon that went 8-2, 7-3, and then a bunch of 6-4s. I think the deck ended up being really well. In fact, Brad Nelson played Eldrazi Chon, which I find pretty awesome.
Yeah, I feel like he always talks smack about this
deck. He talks smack about it all the time.
Yeah.
And he played the exact, not the exact same list, basically the same thing, adding a spatial contortion. I mean, the deck, it's probably just the deck I'm sticking with from now on. It's just really good. I like to play other things, but the deck is really good. And
that's the good thing about Modern is that I think that's the one takeaway from this Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Is that we can definitely look back and we can look at the people who won and did well, and you can say, I know those people put in work.
Right.
You know, and Modern's a format that rewards work and I diligence. Agree.
And understanding of the format, yeah. Et cetera. Yeah. Just a couple more lists just to break it down so you guys might have interest in these lists. Other lists that did really well, didn't top eight, and they might have had bad records in Limited, but they had really good positive records in Modern. Or Traverse Shadow, like I said, they had a lot of copies. They had a 9 win, and I think there's multiple copies that had really good wins of this blue-white control. I can see this blue-white control becoming very popular. I've played it against it a few times already online. Search for Ascanta, Spreading Seas, Detention Spheres, Cryptic, Supreme Verdicts. It is just control. You know, it is very control. And four Field of Ruins with it in as well as the Spreading Seas. Really can turn you off. You know, you just kind of beat them up with whatever. I think the deck is actually going to do well. I thought Jeskai control would be a lot more popular, but the control deck that came to this tournament was blue-white. There was quite a few copies.
Yeah, especially, like, you would think Jeskai would be good considering all the humans that were there.
Right. Yeah. No, it just wasn't that great. Affinity had a lot of decks that did really well. What else can I say about Affinity? Affinity, like you said before, I think you're right. It's a Lightning Bolt. It's the deck equivalent of Lightning Bolt. It is a great deck that I think needs to be in the format. And if you want to beat it, you can beat it. And if you don't come prepared, you might get run over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So congratulations to those playing Affinity and making well at the Pro Tour. We had Black, White, Eldrazi, and Taxes. Only a few copies showed up in Day 2. But it's a deck that I think is still very good. Boggles, we had a couple Boggles decks do pretty well. It had really bad conversion rate, but there weren't that many play it. But there was like one or two that had pretty high. If you're looking down the list, though, of like what did well, really it was just one Lantern deck. You know, there's like three or four of the 11 decks ended up in the high end wins.
Get down to the middle of the pack, and there's all the Grixis Death Shadows.
Yeah, tons of Grixis Death Shadow, and what is Eldrazi Spirits? This is the deck I was talking about. Here's a Spell Queller with Mausoleum Wanderer, Aether. It's like blue white Eldrazi and Taxes. That's kind of cool. Didn't do very well, but yeah, a lot of Grixis Death Shadow all the way down the list, and then you get down also Jeskai Control. It's kind of Titan Breach. Let's talk about Titan Breach for just a second before we wrap up. Titan Breach had maybe one of the worst performances ever. It was, the least successful conversion rate in the whole tournament.
Yeah, I think I saw like 30% or something. Like they said,
by far the worst.
That that like 67% of the people convert from day like on app like. Make Day 2
right
in the field, and so that's the number you want to shoot for,
right?
And it had like a 30.
Yeah, I think one of the highest was Eldrazi Tron and Traverse Shadow, and then Black Red Moon or Black Red Hollow One. I think those were the three highest conversion rates. Storm, like we said, had a terrible tournament. Is there anything else that's cool? We can talk about Corey Burkhart's Grixis Shadow or Grixis Control list real fast. He talked about it during the tournament, and I thought it was pretty interesting. 4 Culligan's commands and 4 Cryptic commands. I was like, what? Really, dog? You going to be running that many? Search for Ascanta seems awesome. Creeping Tar Pits.
Can't say enough about Search for Ascanta.
I mean, honestly, the card is great. It's just an interesting deck. You know, I like that he's got Tasigur, so if he needs to, like, turn the corner and maybe beat down some decks, just have a hard time dealing with turn 1 Tasigur or turn 2 Tasigur. PN Kira Nalar, he was talking about how he just needed a couple more go wide strategies against Affinity. 1 Counter Squall, couple Terminate. I mean, he's got a little bit of everything.
What we can talk about is how this deck does not have Opt or Serum Visions in it.
Oh, wow. It does not have Opt or Serum Visions.
Yep. I think he said during that interview that Thought Scour, that he doesn't need those cards. He has Thought Scour and...
Thought Scour and Search for Escanta.
Mm-hmm. And that'll get him there.
That makes sense. He did... Because all of his cards now are much more powerful. So instead of just drawing a card that looks you one more deep, he's just like, all right, I'll just draw a powerful card.
Yep.
You know, that makes sense. And also Cryptic Command. I mean, replace itself, counter something, tap everything, bounce something.
And kind of, you know, like, he's playing 25 lands.
Yeah.
And so he's got plenty of mana to do everything.
Well, four of them are spells because they're Field of Ruin. Like, I think he specifically was like, yeah, Field of Ruin fixes my mana. And it's like a spell in my deck. It's really good.
And so, you know, I guess that too is another reason to not need Serum Visions.
Or Scrying Effects, because you're going to be shuffling your deck.
Well, not necessarily that, but I would say more than half the time you're playing, you know, especially in the early game, you're using Serum Visions because you want lands.
Right.
And so he doesn't really need to fix...
The extra land
with Serum Visions. He just wants to get as far down in his deck as he can, you know, and his graveyard is really an extension of his hand.
Yeah.
So the bigger his graveyard is, it's like, oh, I got a
Cameo with four Snapcasters, some Taskers, you know, there it is. It is just an extension of his hand. Call against command, grabbing stuff. I think this deck is actually kind of cool. I'm surprised I haven't run into this once on Magic Online. Maybe I could try playing this. Maybe I sleeve this up and do a video with this.
There you go.
Seems like a fun deck to try. It seems like I'm going to be terrible at it, though. You know?
Maybe I better record with this one.
Yeah, maybe you should record with this one. Maybe we'll do a team record.
Team
recording. All right, well, I think that's going to wrap up our Pro Tour recap. We'd really like to just... honestly, I'd like to say thanks for anybody who's listening. Please like and subscribe on iTunes and subscribe on YouTube, because we're going to be putting out, like, the podcast comes out on YouTube, and we also are going to be putting out videos, like we said.
Maybe you could tweet at us and see what videos you want to see.
Yeah, we'd be very interested in you guys letting us know. Speaking of, though, if you subscribe to the YouTube channel this last week, you were entered in a little drawing, and we have the winner, Austin Matthews. Come on down. You subscribe. You can't come on down but you can email me or hit me up on Twitter, DM me, slide into them DMs. Let me get your address and all of your information, social security number, etc. And you're going to win some free packs. We got 5 packs to ship out to you.
Well, you already won some free packs. But
yeah, you did win some packs, but you will actually get the packs if you hit us up. I'll try to reach out to you on YouTube, but I don't know if you'll get that. Thanks for subscribing. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks, Josh, for coming on to this episode.
Woo.
I think it was a successful one, and we'll see you. We out.